know of all of these certifications.
Conference record has joined the conference.
There is only one certification body that rigorously looks at standards, developed procedure, and it is a member-based organization, and that is CRRC. And many of the things that you are mentioning that EPA is doing is exactly what CRRC and its board have been doing and doing within the last 15 years. I am really, really positive. And of course, I should mention that EPA does have an ex officio board member on the CRRC. Why are we doing all these repetitions, particularly knowing that all the other four that you mentioned, those are not member societies that are doing things in a rigorous and standard way? Why are we just not referring to the CRRC label, which in a way is exactly what you are trying to do?
Sure. It's a fair question. I think I understand it fully. The idea is, you know, EPA, we had no interest in, and nor really are we allowed to sole source this function. We can't really point to the CRRC and say Energy Star partners must go through this organization. We had to open it up so that anyone that wants to participate can, and so we have those other four organizations. I also don't think it's totally fair to say that those organizations can't do what we need them to do for Energy Star purposes. And so all of those organizations are accredited to ISO Guide 65, which is the international standard that governs how a certification body should operate. And in addition, they signed on to all of our EPA-specific requirements, and those are on our website. And so we had a lengthy application process with all of them, including a review of all their documentation and in-person interviews to make sure that they understood everything they were going to have to do in all of their product categories. So while you're right that the CRRC has long been doing this kind of thing, and their partner, Energy Star partners, that have long been working with them, and probably this really won't be anything new for them, partners that for whatever reason they choose to not participate in the CRRC program just in general, now there's more choice. And so all of the organizations that are recognized by EPA to do this can do what we need them to do. And so, you know, we're not forcing anyone to go with any one organization, nor do I think have we created any kind of overly burdensome addition to what a partner has to do to qualify products. I hope I've addressed that question. Did I miss anything?
I think that, you know, this is going to be a lengthy discussion. There is going to be a major difference. As an example, CRRC has been constantly working, developing procedures to measure.
Hashem, if I could interrupt for just a second. We can only stay on for another 15
minutes. Hashem, this is Steve. This would probably, you said it would be lengthy. I'd be happy to talk to you more about this.
Yeah, let us do that. That's the reason I wanted to reiterate.
Yeah, because there's many issues at play, and I can give you behind the scenes right now. All right, one issue with the CRC, they're only going to test, and the CBs can do this. And with roofing, they can anyway. So the CRC is only going to test in the way they're comfortable with, and that's how they're doing it. I would suspect a lot of the majority of the qualified products that Eamon mentioned under the new test procedure probably went through the CRC because many people do business in California elsewhere, and they're using them anyway. But so you have the Energy Star specification and test procedures, and there are some differences there. And the CRC aren't comfortable, you know, right now accepting those other, you know, in-field measurements, for example, are allowed under our current specification. So you need to allow other organizations that aren't part of the CRC, and that they're not bound to be, they don't have to be, it's not a requirement of Energy Star, to be able to, at least under the current specification, be able to test their products through a CB. But we are, and I can talk to you about this further, but we're working right now behind the scenes on changes to the specification, not so much in terms of, not in terms at all, in terms of initial solar reflectance or the actual values, but in terms of how products are tested, you know, on test farms or whatever, and how many sample sizes and what test procedure and so forth. And I suspect that'll bring us more in line with CRC.
Let's see if there's more, if there's a question from other folks. If not, we can continue.
This is Joe Sorrentino. This is Joe Sorrentino. You mentioned five labs. I'm familiar with CRRC. I think you mentioned Intertech, UL. I thought I heard Keystone, and the other one I did not have.
Sure, and these are certification bodies rather than labs.
Yes,
so that's,
excuse
right.
me. Right.
Yeah. The fifth one was IAPMO. That's kind of how it sounds. It's IAPMO. They're out in California.
Thank you.
Yep.
Next question. Are there more questions? If you want to ask a question, remember you need to press pound six to unmute your phone.
Hi, this is Ryan Mills with Henry Company. One of the things on here for unit procurement is to get the product off the shelf where feasible. And I was just wondering how that's going to be a level playing field with all the manufacturers when there's many manufacturers that only sell direct to contractor, and there are other manufacturers that sell both to retail locations and direct to contractor for certain products. So how do we make sure that that's going to be the same across the board?
Sure. That's a fair question, and Eamon, we'll have to talk about if you have an answer right now, Eamon, go ahead.
I do, and because this would be the case in a couple of other product categories as well. Certification bodies will have procedures for that, and so if it's really something that can only be done like a direct-to-contractor type thing, they have ways where they can order it blindly so that it doesn't need to go. It doesn't have to come directly from the market. They can place some kind of blind order and do it that way.
Okay. And I do have one other question, too, on the three-year age testing. With the new criteria, do we need to have that three-year age testing to get the Energy Star label?
There's no change to that, yes, of course. For initial testing, certainly, to get your product qualified as Energy Star and have a CB verified, you have to have that three-year age testing.
Is there any acceptance of looking at computer modeling for that three-year time period so you can develop?
No, and I it's good we had the Heat Island group on here, and Hugo doing the presentation. I mean, you just look at that. Go back to that slide, which shows the deviation in three-year testing. I mean, when we initially put that requirement in, it has never changed. It was done in coordination with industry and the integrity program. And it was really industry that wanted it. And so I realize things have changed, and we talk about it. I'm very sympathetic to the reasonings behind trying to go with something else. Obviously, lots of new products coming off. You got to wait those 3 years. But I think when you look, we've never seen any good evidence that, you know, this computer modeling accurately simulates what happens in the field. So we couldn't just do away with that 3-year requirement. And how do you pick, you know, what computer model do you do?
Hugo, do you want to speak to that at all?
I don't think it's a computer modeling. That's actually measurement.
Right, yeah.
Right? You're talking about the slide number, let me see.
Five.
Right. Those are all measurements.
So, okay.
But I just pointed out that in Hugo, those are actual measurements, and it shows that 3-year age testing is important. Until you have a solid age testing protocol in place, that we can't do, you know, anything else but what we have now.
Okay, next question. Remember, you have to go ahead.
Hi, this is Matt Levinsky from Dow Construction Capital. That is a quick question. Can you just briefly describe what the procedure is for product changes when an ingredient is changed?
Who is this again?
This is Matt Levinsky from Dow Construction Chemicals.
Oh, hi, Matt. Did we correspond by email by any chance?
Probably. I think we did, yeah.
Yeah, because I think I got the same question by email through Kathy. And my answer was, and again, this goes back to the beginning of the program, that product formulation, and the Heat Island Group and Hashem and those can jump in on this as well, significant changes to the formulation can affect the reflectivity of the roofing product. So, we work with the manufacturer to determine what there are cases where a reformulation does not. And so, we'll work with the manufacturer to see if this truly is, just a minor reformulation. But if it's a significant reformulation and reconstituting the actual coating in some way, then it has to be retested. Does that answer your question?
Not really, because it just seems like it's a very wishy-washy policy that, like, if I'm looking from my point of view, I'm replacing the resin in there, which is a major constituent in terms of, like, the percentage of the product. But, like, I may know from the composition of that resin that the product that's being replaced is a relatively minor change. And it's just not clear to me kind of what the bar is and how that's being measured, or if it's, like, made clear. I guess what I was looking for was, is there a change from the kind of the previous program? And then, again, like, what is that, what is the rule there?
The rule is I didn't set that particular procedure in place because I wasn't here at the time when the spec was set. But I do know, again, this was at the time of the spec setting, this was an industry back and forth stakeholder process, and it was brought up that it was left somewhat vague on purpose because it's very hard to say what constitutes, and then you could be denying products, you could be making products be retested. It was designed to be reasonable and somewhat lenient. It's just the process is to work with EPA if you're doing a reformulation to say, hey, I'm changing my product this way. Is this going to constitute a major reformulation? Am I going to have to retest? And then it's a question of just sending me some data, talking to, and me working with the folks who support EPA and the Roofing Products Program, and just looking at it and seeing, is this a significant reformulation? The idea is not to just say, if you reformulate it all, then you must, if you do any changes, you must retest, because in many cases, you shouldn't have to. But
right, and I accept that answer. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I just know that some of the other organizations that are out there, my customers have seen wide inconsistency in how how those rules get applied. So that's the only reason I bring it up again. I know it's
okay. Well, I'm open again. As I said, we're working behind the scenes to tweak the specification. So if this is something that can be updated, I'd appreciate feedback on that in terms of people have suggestions and in terms of language that can be put in there other than what's in there right now. Right now it just says if there is a major reformulation to the product that results in a significant – that could result in a change in reflectivity, solar reflectance, then you must retest. If there's something better than that, then I'm open to stakeholders giving me feedback on that.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Neelam, are we going to get cut off right at 5?
No.
Okay.
We have the phone line for the next hour.
Oh, all right. I know Steve has to leave, but it sounds like we have time for a few more questions then. Is there another question?
This is Penny Gift with RRCI. I did have two questions. One, if you could address very briefly the challenge testing after a product is qualified, and then secondly, for Hugo, could you please address the time frame as far as the age testing that you are doing for the laboratory and how you plan to utilize that information and that data?
Yeah. Sure. This is Eamon. I can address the challenge testing question. We included a clause for challenge testing in our requirements. It's frankly not something I I see happening very often. But the idea is that all of our certification bodies have to have a way to run a challenge test should they get a credible evidence that a product may not perform as it should. And so the CB has total discretion to decide whether a challenge is valid or not. It's not as if a competitor can approach a CB and say, you know, I think my competitor's product doesn't perform as advertised. You know, there has to be some evidence to prove that. And to my mind, that really means a whole test report. A competitor would have to go have someone's product independently tested and bring that to a CB to really initiate the challenge. So we have that in there. As I said, CBs have discretion to decide what's a valid challenge, and there will be some kind of negotiation there. So it's something that we wanted to allow for. I don't expect, given all the testing that we have up front and on the back end, it's not something I expect to be a real part of this program. It will certainly be the exception rather than the rule. Does that adequately address your question, or I can give you some more details in a hypothetical if you wanted to call me offline?
No, you've answered it very well. Thank you.
Sure.
And you had a question for Hugo. Are you still on, Hugo?
Yeah, I'm here. And the answer would be, currently the wait period for natural exposure is 3 years. And the mandate we have from the OEA is to reduce that period through accelerated aging, through the accelerated aging protocol that we are developing, to somewhere between 3 and 6 months. That would be the goal. And as we are stand today, we think we are confident we can meet that goal. And we will have a first version of that protocol presented at our workshop during the summer, and more finalized towards perhaps the end of this year. And we expect to receive some initial feedback from early users, and probably modify it based on that. But that the idea is to contribute or to give industry a tool that they can use to advance their materials and bring materials to market in a much faster way than is currently being done. It doesn't substitute the natural exposure, of course, because there is no way you can really simulate 100% of what goes into a roofing material under 3 years of natural exposure under any circumstance using accelerated aging. But you can surely mimic the main features of that, and that's where we're working now. We're trying to identify what the main features are, and you can do this accelerated exposure tests as a tool that gives you a rating that allows the product to be, you know, certified or rated at a much faster rate, at a much faster speed. That's the goal. And if that answers the question.
Yes, thank you. And would you then be considering perhaps this becoming an ASTM standard?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, we would be working with ASTM first, and then also internationally with ISO to develop both a U.S. and an international standard on this.
Are there any more questions? We can open it up to any of the speakers. If you want to ask a question, please press #6 to unmute your phone. All right. Well, this concludes our conference call on the ENERGY STAR requirements for roofing products. And I want to thank everyone who joined us. As participants, as speakers, I think it really pulled together very well, and I hope that you will all take advantage of having each other's contact information further the efforts of creating roofing products that can ameliorate the concerns of both the climate change and the urban heat island effect. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Kathy.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.